From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting Zimbabwe's military is denying staging a military takeover after seizing the state broadcasting facility in the capital, Harare.
To both our people and the world beyond our borders, we wish to make it abundantly clear that this is not a military takeover of government.
The military spokesman said the army was aiming to pacify what he called a degenerating political, social, and economic situation that could result in violent conflict. The army said it's targeting what it called criminals around 93-year-old President Robert Mugabe. The military movement followed a dispute between the commanding general and the ruling ZANU-PF party. Monday, General Constantino Chiwenga threatened to intervene to end what he called a purge of independence fighters from government. A party statement called that treasonable conduct. The Council on Foreign Relations Africa expert John Campbell said what's unfolding is what he called a peculiar coup.
One of the things the Zimbabwean army has always made very clear is that the government of Zimbabwe must be conducted by those that participated in the liberation struggle.
The army action followed the sacking of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. President Donald Trump is back at the White House following a 12-day five-nation trip through Asia, expressing pride in what was accomplished, including making trade more fair.
People were taking advantage, countries were taking advantage of the United States, more than just this region, but the world. And those days are over. We're going to be fair, we're going to be reciprocal, as I said in my remarks before. We will be reciprocal, meaning if they're doing it, we're doing it.
During the trip, Mr. Trump warned North Korea remains a major global military threat and promised a major statement on it later. This is VOA News. Thousands of Iranians spent a third night in the open after Sunday's massive 7.3 magnitude earthquake and hundreds of aftershocks that rocked both Iran and Iraq, killing more than 500 and injuring thousands. Residents in damaged areas have complained of a lack of tents, blankets, water, and food. President Hassan Rouhani toured the city of Kermanshah Tuesday, promising the government would move swiftly to help the homeless. The quake also caused death and destruction in Iraq's northern Kurdish provinces. The director of Iraq's Darbandakan Dam said the quake caused cracks and described the quake as the largest since the dam was built 55 years ago. However, he said there was slim chance the dam would collapse. A gunman carrying a semi-automatic weapon and two handguns opened fire at multiple locations in the California town of Corning, north of Sacramento, Tuesday, killing four before being shot dead by police. Phil Johnston is the assistant sheriff of Tehama County.
Right now, we have no known motive. We know of no real connection to any of the victims. Most of the victims in this case appear to be random selections.
At least 10 other people were wounded, including two children at an elementary school. Reports identified the suspects as 43-year-old Kevin Jansen Neal, who had been arrested in February in connection with a stabbing. Kenya's Supreme Court has reportedly rejected the participation of the main opposition coalition in petitions challenging President Uhuru Kenyatta's victory in last month's election. Opposition leader Raila Odinga's NASA coalition had hoped to overturn the results of the ballot, which was a do-over from the August 8 election, which the court annulled over widespread irregularities. A Trump administration official is expressing concern over the Cambodian government detention of the main opposition leader, along with restrictions on the press and civil society. Matt Pottinger, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, met in Manila on the sidelines of the East Asia Summit with Cambodia's foreign minister. Opposition leader Kem Sokha was arrested in September, accused of plotting treason in what's viewed as a growing crackdown on opponents of Prime Minister Hun Sen. The largest diamond ever offered at auction went under the hammer in Geneva Tuesday for nearly $34 million, a world record of its kind. Francois Curiel is the Asia-Europe chairman at Christie's.
The Bono diamond is an extremely rare deflowless stone of 163 carats, which is the largest deflowless diamond we've ever sold at auction.
It was sold to an anonymous phone bidder for well above the asking price of $25 million. Three U.S. collegiate basketball players from the University of Southern California, Los Angeles, are back in the U.S. after being detained in China on suspicion of shoplifting. The case was taken up by President Trump during his Asia tour and talks with China's President Xi Jinping. Mr. Trump said what was allegedly did was unfortunate and they could have faced long prison terms. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Is there a military coup underway in Zimbabwe?
To the generality of the people of Zimbabwe, we urge you to remain calm and limit unnecessary movement. However, we encourage those who are employed and those with essential business in the city to continue their normal activities as usual.
That's a Zimbabwe military spokesperson speaking a moment ago on the national broadcaster. We'll get analysis from inside Zimbabwe. More protests are planned for the next 3 days in Togo, and human rights groups urge the Ugandan government to arrest visiting Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir.
As a state party to the Rome Statute, Uganda has an unequivocal obligation to cooperate with the ICC in relation to the enforcement of warrants of arrest issued against Omar al-Bashir.
Mohamed Undefuna is the executive director of the Human Rights Network of Uganda. A new report puts Uganda's state security agencies at the top of human rights violators, and Burundian police crack down on human trafficking. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Loud explosions were reportedly heard in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, overnight after troops reportedly seized the state broadcaster, prompting speculation of a coup. The blast came hours after military vehicles were seen heading toward the city after Military Chief General Constantino Chiwenga warned the army to step into political infighting within the ruling ZANU-PF party. A moment ago, a military spokesman spoke on the Zimbabwe national broadcaster.
We are against that act of injustice, and we intend to protect everyone of you against that. To the judiciary, the measures underway are intended to ensure that, as an independent arm of the state, you are able to exercise your independent authority without fear of being obstructed, as has been the case with this group of individuals. To our members of parliament, your legislative role is of paramount importance for peace and stability in this country. And it is our desire that a dispensation is created that allows you to serve your respective political constituencies according to democratic tenets. To the generality of the people of Zimbabwe, we urge you to remain calm and limit unnecessary movement. However, we encourage those who are employed and those with essential business in the city to continue their normal activities as usual. Our wish is that you enjoy your rights and freedoms, and that we return our country to a dispensation that allows for investment, development, and prosperity that we all fought for and for which many of our citizens paid the supreme sacrifice. To political parties, we urge you to discourage your members from engaging in violent behavior. To the youth, we call upon you to realize that the future of this country is yours. Do not be enticed with the dirty coins of silver. Be disciplined and remain committed to the ethos and values of this great nation. To all churches and religious organizations in Zimbabwe, we call upon you and your congregations to pray for our country and to preach the gospel of love, peace, unity, and development. To both our people and the world beyond our borders, we wish to make it abundantly clear that this is not a military takeover of government. What the Zimbabwe Defense Forces is doing is to pacify a degenerating political, social, and economic situation in our country, which, if not addressed, may result in a violent conflict. We call upon all the war veterans to play a positive role in ensuring peace, stability, and unity in the country. To members of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, all leave is cancelled and you are all to return to your barracks with immediate effect. To our respected traditional leaders, you are the custodians of our culture, customs, traditions, and heritage, and we request you to provide leadership and direction to your communities for the sake of unity and development in our country. To the other security services, we urge you to cooperate for the good of our country. Let it be clear that we intend to address the human security threats in our country. Therefore, any provocation will be met with an appropriate response. And to the media, we urge you to report fairly and responsibly. We thank you.
That was a Zimbabwe military spokesman speaking moments ago on national state broadcast. Joining us now from Harare is political analyst Rashid Mukundu. Let me say good morning to you and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you for having me.
We hear that the military has taken over the radio station, the national broadcaster. What did they have to say?
The military came out almost 30 or 40 minutes ago and said that the president and his family are safe, that the military has taken over government institutions, including the state broadcaster, and they are going after the criminal elements, what they allege to be criminal elements that surround the president. So essentially, the military encouraged the civil servants to go to work, encouraged those who work in critical areas to go to work, but also cautioned that they will not tolerate any demonstrations, any marches, whilst they carry out what they say is a clean-up of the criminal elements that surrounded the president. And by that, they mean those people who were with the First Lady in fighting the war veterans of the liberation struggle.
It must be confusing to the people there in Harare and Zimbabwe. Did the military say they are taking over the government? And have they told the people where is President Robert Mugabe?
The military clearly said that they have not staged a coup. They emphasized that point that we have not taken over the government. They clearly said that we have not deposed the government of President Robert Mugabe. And they emphasized the point that the president is and his family are safe, and that they still regard President Mugabe as their commander-in-chief, but they are going after those elements that they allege to be criminal elements who are surrounding the president, and essentially they are political rivals in ZANU-PF. So I agree with you that it's a confusing situation, but the bottom line is that the military is now in charge of Zimbabwe. And the statement that the president is safe, I'm sure, is intended for the regional and the international community, but essentially the military is in charge.
So from where you are in Harare, have you seen any massive military movement? I mean, what are you seeing? I know it must be very early in Harare. What are you seeing and what are you hearing?
I was talking to colleagues almost 3-4 hours ago. We could hear some explosions, but we don't know where that was coming from. Colleagues who live near some of the military barracks, as well as the state broadcaster, were saying that there was a lot of movement of military personnel taking over the state broadcaster. Late afternoon, there was also a movement. An unprecedented movement of heavy military vehicles into the Harare city center. So essentially, there was, I think, a concerned anxiety within the general public on the presence of the military, and it was clear that something was there.
We are very glad to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
That was political analyst Rashid Mukundu speaking with us from Harare. Today's Wednesday, November 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Human rights activists in Uganda are calling on Ugandan officials to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who is in Uganda for a three-day official visit. Activists want Ugandan officials to have Bashir arrested and turn him over to the International Criminal Court to face trial. President Bashir was indicted in 2009 on 5 counts of crimes against humanity and 2 counts of war crimes for events in Western Darfur. He was also charged with genocide during the Darfur conflict. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
Mohamed Ndifuna, executive director of the Human Rights Network, read a statement on behalf of dozens of human rights groups in Uganda.
As a state party to the Rome Statute, Uganda has an unequivocal obligation to cooperate with the ICC in relation to the enforcement of warrants of arrest issued against Omar Bashir.
Sara Chika, who works for the International Center for Transitional Justice, agrees that Uganda must arrest Bashir because of its legal obligation to the ICC. She says Ugandan officials should not spare Mr. Bashir because of either politics or economic interests.
We are not appealing to the president's benevolent nature. We are a country governed by the rule of law. Our statements, our position is grounded in the law. It's grounded in the Rome Statute. It's grounded in the International Criminal Court Act. And importantly, it is grounded in the Constitution, which recognizes the enforcement of international treaties that Uganda is a party to. So we are not begging Mr. Museveni to fulfill his obligations. We are asking the government of Uganda to fulfill its obligations under the law.
This is not Mr. Bashir's first visit to Uganda since being inducted by the ICC. He traveled to Uganda in May to attend President Museveni's inauguration. This week's visit is aimed at improving bilateral relations between the two countries, which were seen as foes during the 1990s and early 2000s when both presidents accused each other of supporting rebels fighting in each other's countries. Ndifuna says it is wrong for Kampala to host a person who is an ICC fugitive.
It's like having a neighbor who rapes your daughter, but is the neighbor that you sell your products to, or your produce for that matter to, and you have to weigh whether you are going to take action against the neighbor, and the possibility of your own starvation may be glaring in you in the face.
Chika warns Uganda could face sanctions by the UN if it fails to arrest Bashir this time.
We ask the government to maintain a consistent approach that stands with the rights of victims, the victims in Darfur who have waited for years for justice. And it can do that by arresting and surrendering President Omar Bashir to the ICC to face trial.
Uganda government spokesman Ofwono Pondo says his country cannot arrest a sitting head of state. And he says Uganda believes President Bashir is instrumental in bringing stability in the region. President Bashir has visited several other African nations since facing ICC indictment on war crimes, including Chad, South Africa, and South Sudan. Both Chad and South Africa are signatories to the ICC. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The coalition of 14 opposition political parties in Togo have called new protests for the next 3 days, beginning tomorrow, Thursday, through Saturday, to drive home their demands, which include a return to the country's 1992 constitution and the resignation of President Faure Gnassingbé, who has been in power since 2005. Farida Bemba Namburema is a human rights activist and director of the Togolese Civil League. She spoke to Ricky Stryak about the current situation in her home country.
This week, we are going to have more people in the process and more cities involving. At this time, I don't want to say that it's the opposition protesting, because this is no longer just a protest of the opposition, but it has become a popular movement. We are expecting this week's protest to be the biggest so far.
And what are people protesting?
Right now, people just want the resignation of Faure Gnassingbé. Faure must go has become the slogan of the protest. Originally, people were asking for the reinstatement of the 1992 constitution, which encompasses term limits, because that constitution was altered by Faure Gnassingbé's father, Eyadema Gnassingbé, who is late now, to remove term limits from the constitution in order to pave way for his lifetime rule and to also allow his son to take over. But following the inability of the people to obtain political change and the fact that the same family has been in power for over 50 years, people just got fed up. They got fed up not only of the long tenure of the same family, but also of the constant human rights abuses as well as the deprivation of civil liberties. And it is almost impossible having a government change as long as the same people are going to be running elections and will be controlling all the institutions of the country. But following massive repression of those protests, the people just say, you know what, if we cannot get this term limit, then we just want you to go.
And there has been talk of alleged human rights abuses, especially in the north near the Ghanaian border, where hundreds of people have come into Ghana from Togo saying their rights have been abused. What are the human rights violations that you have heard of are taking place, and where are they taking place?
There have been a lot of repression, especially in northern Togo. One of the reasons why these repressions occur is because we don't have a lot of media coverage in the north. And then for a long time, the government has always pretended or presented the north as being their stronghold. So they wanted to kill any movement in the north in order to keep maintaining that myth of them being supported by northerners. Unfortunately, it didn't work this time. So they sent militaries to brutalize people. In the case of Mango, it was the special intervention force called Red Berets who were sent to Mango to repress the populations, and so many people got killed as a result, and hundreds fled the community. In Sokode and Bafilo, on the eastern north side of the country, it was the same thing. They sent not only Red Berets, but also a special intervention force unit that has been creating terror, instigating terror in the whole community. People have run to bushes and have been sleeping in bushes. In the bush, the whole community is under siege.
That was Farida Bemba Namburema, director of the Togolese Civil League. She said she was speaking to Ricky Stryak from an undisclosed location in West Africa due to security concerns. It appears human trafficking is on the rise in Burundi. Burundian police stopped at least 14 women last week who they say were being trafficked to Asian countries. Moses Haviarimana reports from Bujumbura.
As poverty rate was recorded at 70% by the World Bank, Burundians are desperate to make a living as they end up being trafficked to Asian countries. I met one of the victims and didn't prefer to reveal her name. She says that she was locked in a house for 4 days without eating, only drinking. She says that she went to make a living because it was to do a housework like cooking, making house and washing clothes. She says that she was mistreated to an extent that she even wanted to commit suicide. Many like her are scammed and think they will earn a better living, but sometimes end up even losing their lives. I met Timothy Nyonguru, whose wife was among 14 women temporarily arrested last week while being trafficked to Oman. He said that the wife left him with a one-year-old child.
My case was very, very heartbreaking. Definitely she informed me that she left, but also she told me that she cannot be back in the house due to the crisis and due to the poverty that affected our household.
Prem Barubukeye, the chairman of an organization that fights against human trafficking in Burundi, say that more than 2,500 Burundians were trafficked last year. He says that now there are women who are abandoning their families and marriages being taken by the human traffickers. Burundi government says that it's trying to put an end to the practice in the country. Pierre Nkurikiye is the Burundi police spokesman.
Last year, more than 11 companies involved in human trafficking have been destroyed by Burundi National Police. More than 20 traffickers have been arrested. Hundreds of women have been saved from the hands of traffickers.
This month, already 17 women were stopped and arrested by the Burundi police while being trafficked to Oman. This year alone, at least 356 young girls, women and children have fallen victims in the human trafficking in Burundi. Moses Haviarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A new report puts Ugandan state security agencies at the top of human rights violators, including harassment of human rights defenders. But police spokesperson Asan Kasinge denies the government agencies harass human rights defenders. Mugume Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
The findings, which were released last week on Friday, were done by human rights NGO Legal Aid Providers Network. Lead researcher Jared Sushabe says the findings found out that the police lead those involved in violations of people's rights.
We found that there are extensive threats against human rights defenders working in corporate accountability sector, including arrests, intimidations, and non-respect of their rights, evictions of communities without compensation, as well as failure to get remedies when they go to courts of law and other tribunals.
According to the World Internal Security and Police Index, an international watchdog, which measures the ability of the police and other security providers to address internal security issues across the globe, it faults Uganda police as one of the worst performing in the world. According to the report, Botswana has the best police in Africa and stands at 47th position, and is followed by Rwanda, which is ranked at 50th globally. Uganda is ranked 124th, Kenya and DR Congo are 125th and 126th respectively, while the Nigerian police stands on the last position at 127. Tushabe, who is also a lecturer at Makerere University, says the poor and less educated are the most victims.
The issue is they are not respecting all the laws, especially for poor communities, for those who don't have a lot of power, especially in rural areas.
Makerere University human rights professor Nicholas Opiyo says he was not surprised with the findings.
If you look at the reports of the Uganda Human Rights Commission, over the last 10 years, the police and the army have topped the list of human rights violators. In specific reference to human rights defenders, the status of respect for their rights is directly linked to the political situation in this country, because human rights defenders push back against powerful people, push back against the state, and an unpopular state or government responds by being aggressive, by being high-handed in the way they deal with human rights defenders.
Police spokesperson Asani Kasinje denies the police violates the rights of others. Kasinje says it is the constitutional mandate of the police to defend human rights of citizens and to protect their properties. He says actually the police works hand-in-hand with human rights bodies to help safeguard human rights. Kasinje admits there are some cases where security organs have literally taken laws into their hands, but says those police officers have been charged.
We have the professional standards unit in the police. We have courts of law. We have our own courts in the police where we charge officers for various professional and disciplinary misconduct.
Tshabe recommends those aggrieved seek justice either locally or in regional or international courts of law. For VOA News, I am Gume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. At least three explosions as well as heavy gunfire were heard in the Zimbabwe capital Harare early Wednesday, according to local witnesses. Witnesses also said military vehicles and soldiers were on the streets early Wednesday, hours after soldiers took over Zimbabwe's state broadcaster, the ZBC. Local residents said instead of the usual 11 p.m. newscast, music videos were played instead. And that is it for this Wednesday, November 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good Wednesday.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information. Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.